You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 289, those first day back blues. The Grey return to work after the Christmas break. Oh, who'd be a football referee? We look at the unforgiving world surrounding Mike Dean. And all instrumental music is terrible and should be banned. Maybe. It's all coming up after some music that has lyrics and hasn't been banned is Reverend and the Makers. Now that she's older, cause the embers of romance, fate and mortgages and lecky bills, being comfortable and that nobody told her that she'd ever reach the stage where her husband bored her or she lied about her age. At least he's got a job for life. Get born, get school, get job, get car, pay tax and find a wife. And on that note, it ain't gonna come too soon if you're not living on the edge. You take up too much room. I could have been a contender.
Probably not so popular at Ronda Rousey's house at the moment. The debut single for the excellent Reverend and the Makers back in 2007 reached number 8 in the UK. Heavyweight champion of the world. Welcome to the Parish Council podcast. It's episode 289. I'm Terence Dackham, and she's our champion of the world. It's Juliet Harris.
Thank you very much, though it's a small world, I suspect. But anyway, hello and welcome to 2017, yeah, everybody, our maiden voyage.
Absolutely. Jules, as we record this, we've just tumbled into the early days of 2017.
We have.
For many people, it's been over the last week or so a return to work, school or college after, for many people, a two-week break. Now, for me, it's over 40 years since I left school. But I still get that end of the holidays feeling inside. And on Sunday evenings, I still get that kind of dread of going back to school the next
homework
day.
Homework night, isn't it? Mm. Sunday night.
Now, I know school life is considerably different, thank goodness, these days from the horror days that I experienced. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if there's any way of conquering that, you know, those like first day back blues.
I don't know. I mean, I tend to do that this year by completely changing my job and working in a different town and actually going back to a completely different job, which works for the 2 days I managed to be there before I had the back-to-school blues in the physical form of flu and unfortunately had to retire hurt for a few days. Hence why we were slightly protracted in doing this podcast and why I still buzz and rattle slightly. So apologies if you're picking up interference from my lungs this week. But, it's strange, isn't it? I always have a slight feeling of... I tried to counteract it by being organised on Sundays and making Sunday my organisation day, so meal planning for the week and making sure I've got a clean suit and tidy shirts. But that only makes me think like I'm ironing my school uniform, really, if you see what I mean. And it's weird, as time goes on, I still feel like I'm going back to school, to the point where I joked that when people asked what day I was starting my new job, I said, oh, Tuesday the 3rd of January is new pencil case day. And I did actually go out and buy a new pencil case in the end, because I felt that having spoken about it for so much, I had to, and a good friend of mine wouldn't believe me that I bought a new pencil case, and I had to send him a photograph of my new pencil case with the pencil and the pens and the ruler and things that were actually inside it. In that sense, I didn't fight the feeling of going back to school. I decided to embrace it, because at least that way you have some control over your own destiny. So I'm not sure what it is about end of holiday feeling, end of weekend feeling. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe because we have a sense of routine, even if we're not at school anymore. For those of us that do sort of office jobs or jobs with regimented hours, you know, we're still returning to a routine, aren't we, really? A routine that, I don't want to say it's enforced on us, or a routine which in an ideal world we might not necessarily want to do. Not that I don't like my job, because I do, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but there's something you can't quite... enforced anything, even enforced fun. I think we've complained previously about enforced fun. I was shunned at my previous job for refusing to take part in the Christmas jumper element and dress down on Friday. I gave money to the thing because I wanted to, but you know, in all honesty, I was about to leave that job. I was slightly hungover and I really couldn't be bothered by that point in time, so I decided not to do it. But anything that is enforced, I think those of us that are perhaps not drones want to try and find a way of getting around that, I think, really. So I don't know how to avoid that feeling unless you embrace it and buy a new pencil case.
It's the being told what to do thing. I think,
yes, it is.
I understand why to this day, you know, I can't bear to be told I have to do something. And I would hate to have to manage me if I worked in a traditional office. You know, I'm virtually unmanageable. But
I mean, I have to say, I'm quite laid back. I have to manage stuff now, and I'm quite laid back as far as managers go. As far as I'm concerned, I'm happy for people to manage themselves as far as they possibly can. And it's only if people are really not doing what they need to that I kind of get involved and try and be sort of sensible. But equally, again, you don't want to be too cheery, do you, really? Come on, why don't we do this? That's one of my pet hates. People say, we're going to do this now. Well, no, we're not. I am, because it's my job, and you're going to tell me that you want me to do it because that's your job. Let's not say that we're going to do it, because we're not at all, are we? Unless you are going to draft this news to me, which I don't think you are, middle manager.
This train of thought also set me off on remembering things that we're all told off about when we're young. And I thought of this while I was getting stressed watching Chelsea lose to Tottenham Hotspur last week. And I noticed that I still have a habit that I do in such circumstances, and that's fiddling with my hair. My hair's quite long now. It's getting sort of shoulder length.
I'm looking forward to seeing it's an updated biography picture of your lustrous locks.
Yeah, I've let it go nuts. I look a bit like a homeless person, I have to say, but, you know...
That's not the vibe I was picturing. No. I thought you could sell yourself better in these circumstances, I must admit.
But I'm not sure. I sort of veer between thinking it looks kind of cool because it's sort of like gone wild and abandoned, or as I say, it looks like, you know, I'm in
unkempt.
But when I watch TV, and particularly watch Chelsea, what I do is I'm constantly, I'm aware of it, constantly pushing my fingers through my hair, twiddling with my hair, and I can still hear a grown-up, a teacher, a parent saying, leave your hair alone, you'll go bald. And things we're told off about when we were children, Jules, that I understand you may even have some that you still do now as well.
Well, absolutely. Well, I was also told off about my hair, which was probably a similar length to yours at the time when I was told off for it, actually. I had a guitar teacher, by the way, at school that used to grade when he needed to have his hair cut, because his was also quite long, by whether or not it had got longer than mine. And if it had got longer than mine, then he decided it was time to get it cut, which, considering I was a 14-year-old girl and he was a 50-something-year-old man, was perhaps not ideal, really. But anyway, that was his plan. I remember my sociology teacher saying to me in 6th form once, he accused me of not listening to something, and I got to that wonderful thing that you can do sometimes when you have been listening, when someone goes, well, what did I just say then? And like, if like me, you have a photographic memory, you can then repeat back to various senses what they've just said, which of course is incredibly enjoyable for me and irritating for other people. And he said, yeah, but you look like you're not listening because it's the hair. And I used to have a habit, as I had long hair at that point, I hadn't had it for most of my life, and then by the time I was about 16 or 17 I grew it, and so I had to learn how to split end my hair and take the split ends off. And I used to think the sociology class was a really good time to do this, so I would sit there and sort of do the split end of my hair when listening to the teacher talking about socialization or whatever, or cults or all that kind of stuff. And so I would look like I was not listening even though I was. And I think that probably is quite irritating, because it's irritating enough that I haven't, that I look like I'm not listening, but if I'm then told off when I have been listening, that's then doubly irritating for the person. I was also, actually, the two things that I was told off the most for when I was younger were repeatedly clicking my fingers, and by clicking I mean cracking my fingers.
Ooh, I'd have told you off about that. I would have told you off.
Absolutely. I still do it now, to be honest, because I'm extremely loose jointed and they hurt if I don't crack my fingers. So yeah, cracking my fingers and swearing to excess were things that I've been told off for. As a sort of 12 or 13 year old, I was told off for swearing to excess, I regret to say. And yeah, still, when my dad does not let me use the F word in what he refers to as his house. So yeah, I still get told off for those things now, which, to be fair, are probably, as you've put it, fairly reasonable things to be told off for, really. I also used to chew the corner of handkerchiefs when upset about things as well.
In a way, that
was quite a useful thing. I wasn't told off for that. I think it was something that my mother did not like, because it then meant she had lots of handkerchiefs to wash. But it was a good way of my family being able to spot if I was worried about something.
It sounds like Linus and his blanket.
Yes, there is much of me that is Linus-esque at times. It has, despite looking like Marcy from Peanuts, I do have a lot. I do have a lot of Linus about me too. So it just goes to show that you're, and I still catch myself doing it occasionally at home. So it just goes to show the habits never quite leave us, I don't think.
I think the split end thing sounds so soothing to do. I think I'd enjoy that. It was
extreme. Well, you know, if your hair gets much longer, presumably you'll have the opportunity to find out. But
as if I would have split ends. My hair is perfect.
Yes, I'm sorry. Terribly sorry to have brought that up.
I don't suppose today's young people are told off so much.
People today, yes.
Young people today. I don't think they're told off so much about listening to music, because, like professional footballers, that they have headphones. Today's young people have headphones permanently clamped to their ears.
Nor are they told off for split ends, because presumably there's an app for that. No doubt.
But my generation was always being told that we couldn't possibly, a bit like you with your split ends, we couldn't possibly be concentrating on our homework if we were listening to that noise you call music.
Yes, of course, yes.
The music while doing homework, that was the thing. And I'd be fairly sure now that studies probably show that, and probably prove that the opposite, that music actually helps us concentrate. That's probably why we do it. I certainly like to have music on if I'm, you know, reading now or something, you know, in the background. I find it helps. But the other one, I found a one that I was constantly being berated about when I was young, is stop fidgeting.
Yes, I am a fidget as well.
When you're a child, you're bursting with energy and you're told to sit still. And I went through a period, which taught me about music there, I went through a period of hating classical music in my in my teens due to musical appreciation lessons at school.
This
mad priest lined us all up on
A story that starts off with this mad priest can never end badly, can it, really?
He used to line us all up on wooden chairs and behind the curtains of the stage in the kind of gym area, and he'd stick his scratchy LP of Beethoven on. It was on some shonky old record player, and we were all told to sit straight, keep still, and listen. And any boy that shuffled in his seat was sent to the headmaster. So stop fidgeting. And now, of course, the ironic things, you know, sitting still for hours is a joy, you know, to me now.
One of the last great pleasures.
Yeah, I have to be bribed to move.
Yeah, I think I might be similar, actually. I think I'm beginning to... my energy levels are depleting, as they were when I was younger as well. Yes, I often used to... Actually, that's another thing I've always been told off for throughout my life, as well as excessive swearing. Girlfriends particularly, very cross at me repeatedly drumming along to things, if I think... That's something that I still catch myself doing sometimes as well, particularly if I've put music on to work or to write to, and I find myself... The one LP that I used to play all the time, I was never good at concentrated music, but there are certain LPs that I'm really good at, and I call them LPs because, much to your chagrin, I do listen to records. Brian Eno and David Byrne, Midnight in the Bush of Ghosts, was a really good album for concentrating, and Help Me Somebody is a good tune on that. They used to play it a lot, but it is impossible not to drum along with your fingers too, which apparently irritates some people very much, history has taught me.
Who'd be a football referee? Probably not us. That's pretty much for certain. That's next after Case, Lang and Veers.
Just in the moment, everything's changed. My dark disposition. Thank you.
the Crosby, Stills and Nash of the female alt country world. An unexpected treat from 2016, actually. I had no idea they were planning to do something together. Case Veers and Lang, or I always forget which order that they come in. I think it's
Case Lang Veers.
Yeah, that's right. It's Nico Case, Katie Lang and Laura Veers, all of whom I've enjoyed very much as solo people. And they recorded this record together, which I think is really lovely. And that's called, the album's called Case Lang Veers, and that track was called Greens of June.
I heard you play that on your Indie Wonderland show a couple of weeks ago. I Shazammed it because I wanted to know before you even said what it was.
Wow, and that's a good sign, isn't it? It's like you like that tune.
And that enables me to save it in Spotify. So I then listened to the whole album, and I love the album. And
it's a great record.
And what struck me is that Katie Lang's voice, a bit like Tracy Thorne's, both of their voices, but Katie Lang in this instance, gets better and better the older they get. I think their voice,
they both started off quite low, but somehow managed to sort of go lower still. Their registers both quite low now. But no, I completely agree. I think their voices have become even richer as time's gone on, really. So they're both in their 50s now, I think. So absolutely agree. And like I say, a real treat, because I'd love all three's work. And when I sort of read in a magazine that it was about to come out, I was delighted, because I just thought, what a great combo of three people. They all shared the writing as well, apparently. So it's a very kind of even-handed album, really. I can't recommend it highly enough.
I agree with you, and it's on Spotify if anyone wants to give it a try, or try before they buy, or whatever. This week, Kanye West's keyboard player.
Yes, indeed, that well-known famous person.
Exactly. He suddenly found he was receiving tweets full of abuse and derision, and for a while he couldn't understand why he was being berated for an incident the other day during a football match between West Ham and Manchester United over here in England. But you see, Kanye West's musician keyboard player pal is called Mike Dean. As he has the Twitter name, The Real Mike Dean, it wasn't long before gormless football supporters from East London were aiming their anger at the wrong Mike Dean.
If only there was a football referee called Slim Shady, and then there'd be some entertaining Twitter action about who was the real one, wouldn't there?
Well, the football referee with the same name sent off West Ham's Sofiane Feghouli, thus allowing Jose Mourinho's Manchester United to steal another victory. But the American, the wrong Mike Dean, soon cottoned on and began firing equal levels of abuse back at his Twitter tormentors.
Which is very much to be applauded, I think.
Yes, he didn't take it well. He didn't say, right, like that John Lewis fellow in America.
Yes, indeed. And the Ashes girl who came round to it eventually.
That's right. This Mike Dean didn't take it well at all, and he used the sort of language that your father indeed would not allow around his house.
He would not be allowed around my dad's house either, which is of course a pity for him, I'm sure.
The refereeing Mike Dean, as a consequence of this incident in that match, has been called arrogant by Niall Quinn. Gary Neville said that Mike Dean's head was a mess, and Gary Lineker called Dean an attention seeker. All of which leads me to ask this question, Jules: who'd be a referee?
Well, this is a fair question to ask. My favourite description, by the way, was, I think it was Niall Quinn. Not only did he describe him as arrogant, he described his mistakes as, quote, rank bad, rank hyphen bad, which is a new insult for me. I'm very, very interested to call things rank bad from now on. Yeah. Not just bad, but rank bad. Not just bad, but Smith's live album level bad, which is pretty bad. It didn't go terribly well for Mike Dean. But then every week there seems to be someone slagging off referees. I have a friend who's a Manchester United fan, and every referee that has ever refereed a Manchester United match is a disgrace in his eyes. I don't know if that says something about Manchester United fans, football fans generally, or just this chap, who is otherwise a very temperamentally sound chap. I do not know. Anyway, yeah, I'm not sure if I want to do it. Although, having said that, I mean, football referees are, I don't know what their level of pay is. I mean, they are sort of centrally contracted at the moment, I think, aren't they? I think there's talk of them possibly sort of being sponsored by people, which I'm not sure would end well in terms of impartiality.
Cricket umpires are actually sponsored by Specsavers, which I think is absolutely, you know, a wonderful
that's really good, isn't it? I really like that a lot. It's a mug's game being a referee anyway, because you're never ever going to win. It's always going to be a bit of a hiding to nothing, I think. You're always going to be upsetting somebody, whatever you do. It's almost a bit like we've had on the day of us recording this, Tuesday the 10th of January, we've had a bit of a chaotic day from Jeremy Corbyn attempting to relaunch his public image to a not terribly wonderful results, and it's all gone a bit wrong, the media strategy and something that we often refer to in politics called message discipline seems to have gone a bit awry, where he seems to have distanced himself from his own speech before he'd given it in one particularly enjoyable interview. Jackie Smith, the former Home Secretary, said on Twitter that a message discipline is a bit like having good underwear. You don't want to rave it around, but you soon notice it if it's not there. And I think referees are similar, actually. The sign of a good referee is when you don't really notice that they're there, really, that a referee is able to keep control of a game without actually being too obvious and too kind of obtrusive, really. So it's difficult. I think there are some referees that attention seek. I think I'm not sure if I agree in this instance, but I think that Gary Lineker is right in the sense that there are some referees that in the past have behaved a bit like sort of rock stars, some of them that have gone on to write autobiographies, for example. Off the back of being the only English referee to be selected for a World Cup or something like that. There are some who really have made themselves look a bit silly in that respect. I also remember, do you remember Paolo Di Canio shoving the referee?
Oh, gosh, I do, yes.
I can't remember the name of the referee.
He went down in instalments, didn't he?
Well, yeah. this was the issue, exactly. He sort of river danced backwards, really, that he sort of shoved this poor referee over. Obviously, Paolo Di Canio has had a bit of a checkered career anyway, but yes, I certainly think the referee made a bit of a meal of it, I must admit. But, I'm not sure if I want to be a referee, simply because you have the same level of scrutiny that players have, possibly even more so. And even if referees do get paid, fairly well,
£70,000 a year. I checked it while we were just chatting there.
That's good.
Average yearly income for a Premiership referee is £70,000.
Which is roughly what a Premier League player will get in a week, isn't it?
It is, at the
lowest level. So actually, I'm not saying that £70,000 a year isn't a really good salary. I'm sure Laura would be delighted we were on £70,000 a year. But for the level of scrutiny that you get, and compared to the players, for example, it probably is a bit of a hiding to nothing, really, when it comes down to it. You're only ever noticed... I know it's human nature, but you're more likely to be criticised for having a bad game than you are for being praised for having a good one, aren't you, really?
Absolutely, and I think perhaps you do have to possess a somewhat inflated view of yourself to be tempted to become a referee, because, I mean, who really would choose to have 22, as you say, highly paid players cursing at you, 80,000 football supporters baying at you in the stadium, booing at you as well, and, catatonic managers confronting you, and of course, as we just said, yesterday's men, former players, analysing every single decision you make. But what I think about the personalities of people like Mike Dean and Bobby Madley and all these other ones, it's one of those jobs where you just can't win, because a referee who keeps his own counsel, maybe maintains a low profile, stays calm, would be accused of being weak and allowing players to walk all over him. Whereas a referee like Mike Dean, with a personality who's expressive, is described as arrogant and attention seeking. So
absolutely. Oh, by the way, Paolo Di Canio updates, by the way. That man is the sort of the international Joey Barton equivalent, isn't he, really? He finds trouble in an empty room.
Yes.
Recently axed as Sky Sports Italia pundit after displaying fascist tattoo during live broadcast.
No.
So if anybody's wondering where Paolo Di Canio is now, that's where he was, or rather was no longer, as of September 2016.
Good grief, I had no idea.
The word ducks, D-U-X, which is apparently a fascist symbol. There's a picture of him here with it on his arm during his playing days at Lazio, so it's not a new thing. So they've quoted as saying, The TV, Sky said, and I do have some sympathy for Sky here. We talked in the past about apologies and non-apologies, and they've said, we made a mistake. We apologise for those whose sensibilities were hurt. Well, that is a bit of a non-apology apology. But having said that, I don't think they made a mistake. It wasn't their fault. They didn't realise that, you know, this nutter had that on his arm. So, yes, indeed. So, and also a picture, news story illustrated with a picture of him making a fascist salute. So, and so I suspect we might not be hearing much more from Paolo Di Canio for a while, I think. But for those of you wanting to know where he was, well, that's the latest.
That's a useful update, indeed, yes. Well, it's a job of nightmares, as we say. It must be incredibly stressful, and I salute
those. With people like him is probably not great in itself. So, yeah, absolutely. We salute you, referees of Britain.
Salute them. Yes, I wouldn't do it. Now, we all know that Juliet loves her instrumental tracks.
Yes. Yeah.
She's wrong, of course. All instrumental, instrumental music is awful. That's next, right after this non-instrumental track from a glorious album by Donald Fagen. from one of my favourite albums of all time, Donald Fagen, and the album is Nightfly, and that's track one, IGY.
It is brilliant. And also, when we've talked in the past about our favourite album sleeves, I'm sorry I've not given the Nightfly by Donald Fagen the love it deserves, because I love that sleeve. I wish that I could look as cool as Donald Fagen on that front sleeve. It is brilliant.
It's a brilliant cover as I say, one of my favourite albums of all time. It's one of those rare albums. It's not a duff track. No filler or killer, as we say. Jules, we know, you know probably as well, but we all know that you're almost flawless. You have it all going for you. You're highly intelligent, quick-witted, attractive, funny. You have it all.
I would dispute all of these to varying degrees, but I thank you for your kindness. However, I suspect that you're about to rebut this.
You make one catastrophic error in your life choices. And, you know, it has to be said, you not only have a fondness for instrumental music, you even select examples for your radio shows and DJ gigs. And
absolutely.
This is a terrible, terrible mistake on your part, and I'm hoping that you're going to see the error of your ways. All music should be sing-along-y, the greatest thing in the world. The best thing in the world is to have Joni Mitchell, the Beatles, Todd Rundgren pumping out of the car stereo, and then to be able to sing along at the top of your voice. Instrumentals are a frustration and have no purpose. They should be banned. Surely you must see this, Jules.
Well, I knew you were going to put this in a very conciliatory way, as indeed is your wont whenever we disagree on things. I really like instrumentals.
Oh, no.
I know that people dislike them. I know that they have a terrible rep as being lift music,
yes,
as being the boring bits at the beginning of a film in the cinema before the film comes on, particularly dull moments in old black and white films at the BBC show on weekend afternoons. I accept that their name has been blighted by those things. I really like instrumentals because sometimes if I'm really tired or if I've got a particularly full brain, it's nice to be able to listen to something without being expected to remember words as well and sing along to them. And also I like the fact that I think you, in a way, you have to be quite talented to write different types of instrumental music, because you have to be able to sum up certain moods. And that's why I particularly like some of the Keith Mansfield stuff and things like that, because they're quite often they were writing and the blow up compilation albums and things like that were often select things from, because it's almost like they're writing, well, to coin the song that the Blur, the Dame Lulbar number that appeared on the Trainspotting soundtrack, theme from an imaginary film. In a way, they're writing music for films that were never made, and I really like that. I really like being able to hear, I sometimes can, if I listen to an instrumental, hear the film that it's been sort of not written for, if you see what I mean. And also I think instrumentals are quite fun, and when I am DJing out, they work quite well for background music early on in the evening. They work well for that. And also sometimes that I just really like instrumentals, particularly easy listening. As regular listeners know, I'm particularly fond of Spanish Flea by Herb Alpert. I have played that on the show before, much to the of some regular correspondents, which I make no apologies at all. I just really like it. I can see why they don't appeal to everyone. I can see why, you know, some people might think they're not very interesting, but actually I sometimes think they're extremely catchy, in this case of Spanish Flea, and I just enjoy it. Also, perhaps vainly, I like them because I live in a medium-sized flat on the third floor in a fairly quiet street, which means the sun streams in, and it has the feel of a space-age bachelor pad sometimes. And so I like to, you know, put an actual record, an LP record, on my stereo and play a bit of Dave Brubeck and feel like I am in a very cool 60s film, and I am a hip and happening hepcat. So in a way, I like instrumental tunes because they make me feel cooler than I actually am, I think.
See, I can't think of a pop or rock instrumental that I don't skip if it comes up on an album or a playlist.
I'm just trying to think of the all-time great instrumentals and see, and that Road Test Monty, Telstar.
Well, I
think about that.
Well, what was that? Was that the Shadows? I mean, because the Shadows were an outrage. They were nothing without Cliff. No, it wasn't.
Telstar was. It was Joe Meek, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that. Let me just tell you, because I checked. You saying the best instrumental of all time? Because I checked out. First of all, I checked out the 30 most played tracks of all time on Spotify. Not one instrumental amongst the 30 most played tracks. However,
we know that the general public are idiots. Is 2016 proved anything?
Fair enough. I checked out the top-selling instrumental singles of all time. And they should all be dropped at the deepest point in the Pacific Ocean, but here they are. Number three, top-selling instrumental single of all time, number three, something called Exodus by Ferrante and Teicher from 1961.
I'm not familiar with this, but I am going to go and look it up because I'm sure I will like it.
Number two, Wonderland by Night, Burt Camfort and his orchestra, 1960.
Oh, now you're talking. That's excellent.
And number one, top-selling instrumental single of all time, theme from A Summer Place, Percy Faith and his orchestra, 1960.
Actually, that is behind one of my favourite ever Simpsons jokes. I think we always speak about my love of the Simpsons. My favourite ever Simpsons episodes is the one which is a complete take-off of the Beatles, where they form a barbershop quartet, yes. B-sharps. Yes. They decide to get rid of Chief Wiggum for being, quote-unquote, two village people, so who's obviously meant to be Pete Best. So they try and get a fourth person in, and they hold auditions on a stage. And the very old man with a large nose called Jasper gets up on stage and they play theme from A Summer Place, and he begins to sing, and he sings theme from a summer place, it's the theme from a summer place, the theme, at which point he's then thrown off stage for basically singing theme from A Summer Place to the tune of theme from A Summer Place. So it is, that is one of my favourite ever jokes from The Simpsons. And I have to say, I had a double set. I first heard that because I had a double CD that someone bought me when I was younger called something like Music to Watch Girls By, and it was kind of the rap listening classes, but it had things like that on it, and I thought it was great, and I still do. So not for everybody instrumentals, but I think that, you know, I know that you say this in jest, but a good lesson that we can all learn is, just because we do not like something personally does not mean A, that nobody else should like it, and B, that it is automatically pants. Although I have to admit that yes, some of the Shadows without Cliff were pants.
Wait a minute, you're trying to say that I'm not right about everything?
Well, only in this instance. So you are right about most other things, if it makes you feel any better.
Now, with your flu-ridden body, I suspect your diary may be somewhat curtailed this week.
Well, yes, I've been easing myself into 2017, unfortunately, it has to be said. Things do pick up a bit next week, but this week I am doing the radio again. So I do have some voice back, so I'll be doing Indie Wonderland tomorrow. That's Wednesday the 11th of December. I'll be introducing my track of the month belatedly for January, and looking forward to some things that are happening this year, records coming out, etc. So that's 8 until 10 p.m. www.barricaderadio.com for my Indie Wonderland show. And Saturday Social returns this Saturday as well, from 6 until 7. We finally reached W in our A to Z of Northern Soul, Motown, Mod and Misc. So I am doing, and that's 6 to 7 on barricaderadio.com. So I am doing two lots of radio this week, if nothing else.
Oh, that's excellent. Thanks to our bonnie executive producer, Rona. And what are we playing out with? Is it an instrumental?
It's not, actually. The one week I don't pick an instrumental is the way that we talk about them. I almost wanted to change my choice just to spite you. However, I decided not to, because I am better than that. I will, of course, make you pay bigly, as our president-elect would have it. But anyway, I picked this because I came across it recently. We talked previously about Spotify and how much we like their recommended playlists and that sort of thing. And this came up on my Spotify Discover thing for one week. I think because I rather like Walk Like a Panther by this band. And so I think it said, well, you will like this then. And I hadn't heard it in years. And I hadn't really remembered what a good song it was. It's Phil Oakey doing the vocal, and I really like it. And actually, the reason why I've taken to it with such enthusiasm this time round is there's something, I mean, it's a great dance number, it really is, but there's something weirdly melancholic about it. We alluded earlier to the continued travails of Jeremy Corbyn and the dying embers of the Labour Party, and that there is such rancour in various parts of the party at the moment, and particularly that expressing any kind of sympathy, not just for Tony Blair as an individual, but for the Labour governments of 1997 to 2010, brings with it such utter scorn from certain people that actually, although there were lots of things that I disagree with about some of those years, particularly Iraq, I marched against it, but there were lots of things that I think were great achievements, like the minimum wage and all sorts of things like that. And actually, the line in this about the whole idea that the theme of this is that this is a chap that goes off to space and was the first person to go from where he comes from, and when he comes back he's expecting a great fanfare and no one is actually very interested or wants to talk to him about what he's seen or what's happened, really. And the line, "How come no one wants to know what I saw," I think sums up what it feels like to be a Labour moderate at the moment, which is rather rejected and abandoned and confused and lonely. So on that cheery, upbeat note, this is The All-Seeing Eye, featuring Phil Oakey and First Man in Space.
I was the first man in space on our street. I had to leave my wife and kids behind. It was a chance I could not pass up on. It was the journey of a lifetime. I threw away my packing up as they were waving me bye-bye. Sometimes all I need is the air that I breathe, and the air that I breathe is so thin I get high. And I'm floating like God in his heaven, high in the stratosphere. Darling, come quick, you can see our house from here.
Yeah.
You have been listening to a DACM Media production.